Hey everybody, it's Mo with a new podcast for thejumpball.net. I know we took a little hiatus after Thanksgiving, but we're back now. We got a couple episodes coming up for you. Today our guest was Tom West. I write with him at the Clipperholics. He also writes at FanRags, and he's starting at new website, 16 Wins a Ring. Today we got into talking about the Clippers, talked about the Eastern Conference, the Western Conference, and who we think is going to win MVP. You guys ready to tip it off? Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Oh man, I'm glad I can get you on. One thing too, so we don't freak out my four or five listeners. You know, you are calling it. We are talking. You are in London, so it's that's the accent. If anybody's curious,
yeah.
And you know, we just finished talking about how long it takes him to, you know, how he's got to get up really early to watch a game, and then late in the evening he's catching games. So we're pretty spoiled on our end here in the States.
Yeah, it's all about League Pass. League Pass has changed everything since I finally got a subscription a few years ago.
Yeah. Whole new world opened up for you.
Oh, live streaming games at like 2 a.m. on dodgy websites is difficult, so I'm glad I've left that in the past.
God knows who's trying to hack your information while you're on that website.
Oh, no idea.
One thing I did want to talk to you about, it's, you know, you and I kind of collaborated, and when we say collaborated, I did a very small part. You handled the heavy lifting, but we were talking about how the Clippers need to stagger their lineup more on Clipperholics. Why don't you dig in a little bit about that?
Well, I mean, I wrote about it a little bit before the season, just because, you know, it's not exactly a hot take, but if you have Chris Paul, you have Blake Griffin, you want to stagger them a little bit so that the bench, which has always been a big weakness of the Clippers, everyone knows that. You want to give them a sort of anchor, a playmaker that they can look to create the offense and keep the ball moving. And if you can stagger more of Blake's minutes into that group, then it's going to help, you know, kind of like Billy Donovan had to do with Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. You can't always just use them together, you know, if depth's an issue. And Doc said in the summer that he wanted to stagger them more this year, that he knew he had to do it. And it just hasn't really happened yet. You know, a couple of games ago, like, Blake had 40 minutes and, you know, he had a few more spells with the bench, but it's still not really been happening. And I looked at seeing some of the lineup numbers, and he's only spent about 5% of his minutes with his top sort of all bench lineup, which is just hardly anything. And he spends about 60% of his time exclusively with the starting five. And then after that, it's kind of just an odd variation with Crawford or Austin Rivers.
Right.
So really it was kind of breaking down how it needs to be used differently, and it could help because after a really strong start to the season, the bench lineup's kind of fallen back to normality a little bit after being, I think they were the third best lineup in terms of net rating after the first sort of handful of games. So now that's changed. Blake needs to be used a little differently is kind of what we were looking at.
Yeah, right. And one thing I just kind of want to explain to listeners who might not understand the concept of staggering your lineups, it's really setting up your lineup so you at least have one of your best players always on the court. So, you know, the lineups we were talking about that I think we both really kind of would like to see Blake play more with is, you know, Raymond Felton, Jamal Crawford, Austin Rivers, Mo Spates, and a Blake Griffin lineup I think would be something that could really open up the floor and provide that lineup a little more playmaking, give Crawford more room to create and things like that. It just makes the defense have to work a little harder to defend that lineup.
Exactly. And like some of the players you looked at, working with Jamal and Blake in the pick and roll, like so much opens up through that, you know, Griffin rolling to the rim, that draws defenders inside, that's going to create space for shooters in the corners. And then because Blake is such a great passer himself, you know, he can pass out of the pick and roll or he can run it himself. Or just work from the post and the elbows like he does so well. It just totally changes everything. And that way you can kind of cut down Crawford dribbling around for ages trying to pull up for a jumper when the ball's not moving and he feels like he's got to create something. So it just takes some of the pressure off him.
Yeah, and I think that's a real important thing. You know, the bench, as you said, you know, started off the season and it was amazing. I think, you know, the real question was whether it was sustainable. I think most people didn't think the bench was going to sustain it. And part of it, too, was, I mean, I just didn't think they were going to sustain it defensively. I mean, you had Mo Spates and Jamal Crawford playing out of their minds defensively. And I was like, yeah, that's not sticking around for a bit. So I think that's kind of the challenge there. I think there's going to be a lot of good opportunities out of that if Doc were to really commit to it. I think last night they played Orlando, and I saw he had that lineup out there for about a minute and a half, and that's not going to get it done. There's no way to really kind of figure out what you have in that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You just need to use it a little more often, and it's not hard to do. And a group with, you know, Paul, Jordan, and Redick, you know, used more exclusively together without Blake, it's not like they're a weakness. It's not hard for them to create looks, and Paul can, you know, can do so much by himself, yeah, and absolutely. It's just breaking them up. It's simple. It really is.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like Doc has adopted that yet, and nobody knows why or what's the constraints unless you're with the team every day and what the rationale is. But just on the outside, it's something that you and I both look at and just like, we're waiting. Hoping this one happens. I did want to talk a little bit about, you know, we kind of have a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Did I mess that up? Was that the other way around? Is it Mr. I screwed that up.
I think that's right.
All right, cool. This is, you know, it shows how literate I am. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you know, kind of Clipper team we have, you know, they start the season, their first 16 games, they're 14-2. You know, since then they've gone 4-5. They've lost some really bad games. Indiana twice, once without Paul George, double overtime game to Brooklyn. You know, they have some pretty bad losses lately. What team is the real team to you? Do you look at this 14-2 team and say like, this is the Clippers I'm expecting down the stretch, or this 4-5 team seem like more the real Clipper squad?
Well, I mean, it all comes down to what we get in the playoffs, which has obviously been the question for years. And I would like to think that when we get there, this team will be so tired of losing, and providing they're healthy, I'd like to think they have the motivation to be like, right, it's absolutely now or never. And they're going to be that 14-2 team that was so locked in defensively, constantly talking, helping out, switching well. I'd like to think that's what we get. In the meantime, I definitely think there's going to be up and down stretches. Like you wrote about early in the season, whether they could maintain their defensive intensity, making a comparison to a couple of seasons ago, I think it's going to waver. I just think that's the case with this team, and I think the bench is going to be a bit up and down, especially if Doc's not staggering much with, you know, guys like Crawford and Spates. The defense is going to be a bit inconsistent, which is why I miss Cole Aldrich on the bench.
Right.
I just think he had consistency. He didn't, you know, he couldn't space the floor, but he was consistent in what he did. You can count on his defense being there. You can't always count on Spates hitting three threes and scoring 15 points. So I think they're going to have up and down stretches, but I definitely think they are a lot better than this 4-5 stretch we are. I think they'll probably be somewhere in the middle of the two. I think it's just going to be a bit up and down. We've got to see, but some of their recent losses, I don't know what happened. I mean, some of it's got to be mental, whether they just lost the ball, you know, kind of, you know, snapped out of whatever mindset they were in early on, whether they got a bit, I don't know, you can't say bored, but something changed and the intensity changed and the ball wasn't moving as much on offense. So I think they'll be more like the team we saw early on, but it's just going to be a little bit up and down, which is why I try to say we can't overreact too much to these down spells, because I think, you know, every team's going to have some bad games and bad stretches. Like Cleveland, they lost 3 in a row recently, so everyone's going to have a few bad patches.
Absolutely, and I think that's one of those things is people tend to overreact whenever there's a team goes on a pretty bad losing streak and things like that. You know, they did play a lot of games back to back, or, you know, 3-4 nights kind of thing, and I think that might have contributed a little bit to the losses, but.
Yeah,
I have noticed that it feels like offensively, although the offense is humming, it's not as efficient as it was at the start of the season. Like, we're not seeing as much player movement, ball movement. It's kind of getting back to that stagnant, you know, Chris and Blake got to create for everybody.
Yeah.
And that's something that does kind of trouble me, and it's a trend I hope to see them get back to what they were doing in the beginning. Because at the start of the year, man, that thing was humming.
They were killing it early on. At both ends. And then, you know, you saw against like the Warriors, it was just that it stagnated around Paul and Griffin's post-ups were just lost. He was driving in against guys, and normally he'd go up strong and finish, but he was turning around for these awkward passes and just throwing the ball away into contested lanes, and it was just clueless. And obviously he's not going to be that bad. Like, I saw a few people commenting saying like, oh, it's time to trade Blake now, and it's the most ridiculous overreaction to one game I could have seen.
I mean, you touched.
I think. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. You touched on it though. You know, people, every now and then I'm hearing somebody say, like, oh, they should trade Blake, they should trade CP. Like, that's just ludicrous to me. I don't understand why you would, you know, Amin Elhassem said it best on, like, a True Hoop pod. You know, teams work extremely hard to find talent like that. Like, once you have that, you can't just throw it away.
Exactly.
And I think it's just kind of a little bit of a crazy talk when people are sort of saying, you know, well, they got to trade Blake, they got to trade CP. I just don't see the reasoning behind it. You know, as long as they're in contention, you got to stay with it.
Yeah, and the point is, you know, who'd you trade them for? Because, I mean, I saw one speculation thing the other day, Blake Griffin straight up for Danilo Gallinari. I mean, what is that? I don't know.
That's not even at all. That's terrible.
And, you know, people were saying, you know, trade Blake Griffin for a package, get a wing player, you know, get a couple of role players and, you know, look for a little more depth over a superstar. But you just don't trade a talent like that. And when you do get to the playoff, there's even more pressure then on Chris Paul to do everything when, right, you know, you get in fourth quarter situations or you need a bucket. There's no Blake Griffin there. You don't want his role to be replaced by Jamal Crawford, you know, jacking up extra shots and playing extra minutes to be that creator. It just doesn't work. So I don't know why you'd trade either of them, especially as their value is going to be low with free agency coming up next year.
Yeah, that's definitely a crazy thought. But you brought up Chris, and I kind of wanted to talk about his run over the last couple of games. I mean, a few nights ago, 20 points, 20 assists, no turnovers. The next night, he follows it up with 21 points, you know, 14 assists and just 2 turnovers. You know, last night was a little more difficult. He had 4 turnovers, you know, but over 3 games, when you average that out, 2 a night, still had 10 assists and 16 points, you know. Can you elaborate a little bit on the run that CP's having and the overall season he's having right now?
Well, I think he's, you know, I think, like you said, with fatigue in that down stretch where they had a couple of losses, like to the Pacers and the Pistons and the Nets, he got a bit swept up in that as well with, I think, you know, he had a few uncharacteristic passes that looked rushed, that weren't wise, and he had a few more turnovers than normal. And that, you know, a few people I saw reacted to that, you know, saying, oh, he's not an MVP candidate anymore. But generally speaking, outside of a few blips in the middle, he's just been so under control, I think. And he can just get everything he wants to on the floor. He can get his shot off even as a 6'31" without Russell Westbrook leaps. He can create his mid-range shot as well as anyone, really. He's been shooting better than ever from three, whether that's LASIK surgery or whether he's just hot, I don't know. But he's you know, better than ever in that regard. Still leading the league in steals, as far as I know. His RPM is, the last time I looked yesterday, it was at least 30% higher than anyone else. He's at 9-something, and Jimmy Butler is second around 6. So the overall impact and how much better the team are with him on the floor is at a level way above anyone else right now. And he's still, you know, the best two-way point guard in the game. I don't think that's changed. And a few people were saying, you know, whether the Clippers would really win this year if Paul is going to take a step back now, is, you know, approaching his mid-30s very slowly. But he's just not really stepped back at all. He's still a tremendous player. And I think that speaks volumes about how good he actually is, that even at 31, you know, approaching 32, he's doing what he does so easily.
Yeah, I mean, I get flabbergasted, and granted, I shouldn't let Twitter bother me as much as it does. But when these guys go out there and start, you know, attacking CP, you know, and talking about him not being a great player or a great point guard, I kind of look at it just going, like, that's ridiculous to me. For what he can do on the court, you know, we haven't even really talked about his ability to post up guards, you know, and create out of that for his teammates. You know, he is the best two-way point guard out there right now. You know, he's the guy that can run the offense and defend. I think it drives me nuts, man. It just drives me nuts. You know, I know he hasn't won a championship. I know he hasn't gotten to the conference finals. You know, but that's not all on him. That's just a matter of sometimes circumstances or the team he has. And it's not really fair sometimes, I feel like, to judge him that way. You know, where do you have him ranked as, you know, in the all-time point guard lists? Where do you got him in that ranking?
I mean, I've probably not thought about this as much as some other people. I know Shane Young, he's a big Chris Paul supporter, has written some great stuff on him in the past. And, you know, he'd take him ahead of anyone, really. But I would still have Magic first. just for the championships and for the fact that obviously it helped that he was 6'9", but he could be moved to center. He could just do so much. He was amazing in his prime. I wish I was alive to watch him play, but that's another story. And then I would probably have Chris Paul, I think, second ahead of John Stockton, purely because of the way he can score. I think he can get his shot better. He's well and truly maxed out what you could get from a 6-foot frame for an NBA player. He's been doing this so long, so competitive. You look through all the numbers and how much drastically better his teams are with him on the floor. You know, he's obviously had some good supporting casts, but less so in New Orleans. He's not had Karl Malone next to him throughout his career. And I just think the impact he's had, whoever you put next to him, how much better he can make a team. You know, we talk about LeBron making his teammates better. I think Chris Paul is the, you know, another amazing example of that. And I think that's probably why I would put him second, regardless of the lack of championships or conference finals appearances, because I wouldn't say that's, well, you can't say that's all on him.
Right.
So I'd probably put him second.
Okay. I have him third. I have, you know, I still have Magic 1 with you. I have Isaiah Thomas as 2.
Okay.
That guy, him and CP can go back and forth, I think, you know,
yeah.
But just he had such a fight in him, is very much like CP. I think the championships and willing those Pistons and being that leader of the Bad Boys kind of has him there. And then I have CP at 3 for all the points you made. I mean, I just think he's a phenomenal point guard. But for CP to take that next step and get to the conference finals, you know, he's going to have to beat a team like the Warriors or the Spurs. You know, do you think the Clippers can take him on? Do you think... You know, where do you see them stacking up? I know we just had the Clippers get crushed by the Warriors. What are your opinions on that?
Well, I think, I mean, we won't tell too much on that one game, but I think if you took out that first quarter, if they played that first quarter well, if they didn't rack up 9 turnovers or whatever it was,
right,
and they had their composure and they played in a rhythm for the rest of the game and they played up tempo at both ends, I think that could have been an entirely different result. But I think I'm not worried too much about the Spurs for the Clippers. I think they're younger. I think they're more talented. I think they've just got more with Chris and Blake. I feel like they can take what the Spurs have. I still wouldn't trust the Spurs front court with Pau Gasol, guys like David Lee. Even though the Spurs women still obviously working very well as a collective unit, I'd still take the Clippers' athleticism and their pace and their scoring over the Spurs. And providing they can limit Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge, the Spurs have less offense outside of them, and their defense obviously took a hit losing Tim Duncan. So I do think the Clippers definitely have an edge against the Spurs. Against the Warriors, though, I think if they do make it to the conference finals, which is where I predict they will go, I'm just not sure I can see them beating them. I think there's so much firepower the Warriors have. Their length, we saw, was a massive issue in the other game. Stopping Klay Thompson with, you know, Redick is obviously going to be difficult. JJ Redick couldn't get, you know, any shots, really. He couldn't get any open looks. And that can obviously change in different games. That's not going to be the case every night. But I just think stopping the combination of what the Warriors have with Curry, Thompson and Durant is so, so difficult to do. I'm just not sure I can see them doing that for 7 games.
Yeah, I also think Draymond's got a little property inside Blake's head.
He does. He does.
You know, I think that's something we saw in that last game. And I think, you know, I don't want to put too much on one game, but that was something that was definitely very noticeable. It felt like Blake had put an extra emphasis on that game. He even said before the game, you know, that he was aware how big this game was, and then he really had one of his worst nights, unfortunately. I think that's a definite problem for the Clippers. I think you're right on with the Spurs. I just think the Spurs don't match up well with this Clipper team. They have nobody that can guard Blake. And if, you know, we saw it when they played in the playoffs 2-3 years ago and the Clippers knocked them out. It's one of those things, they can't guard Blake. And that's a series where he can just go completely nuts.
Yeah, and they've downgraded since then. So I definitely think Blake could have, you know, a series of his life if the Clippers take, if they get to play the Spurs and beat them.
Yeah.
But like you said with Draymond, I think that is a huge concern, because Blake Griffin really could be the difference maker in that series against the Warriors. If he can draw fouls, if he can get Draymond frustrated, get him, you know, kicked out of a game, no pun intended, get him out of a game, you know, create foul trouble if he gets switches on smaller guys, that could be huge, because the size advantage is obviously where the Clippers have an edge. But if he's rattled like that and he is turning the ball over, that can quickly cause the offense to stagnate. You get a few turnovers, the Warriors can go and run so, so fast. And I think if the Clippers kind of lose their focus, I think, you know, those runs that the Warriors can go on will just rack up. And it's so hard to keep up with that. And if the Clippers do get rattled and Blake can't be the difference maker that he needs to be, I just don't see how they'll win over a course of a series.
So I got a bit of a random question for you, Tom. You know, what's the gelato scene like in London?
Well, I don't actually live in London. I live a bit outside, but I'm sure it's pretty good.
Okay. Well, the next time you're in the States and you're in LA, I'm going to take you to my favorite gelato shop. It's called Uli's Gelateria. It's here in downtown LA in the Spring Arcade. They got some of the best flavors. It's always amazing. I've never had a bad flavor there. I love them all. And it's the reason why I have to go to the gym, you know, 2 times a day just to work that off. But it is one of my favorite places. So anybody in the LA area, go check out Uli's Gelateria. And now we're going to get back to talking basketball. Tom, I want to shift a little bit away from the Clippers, you know, where we talk a lot about the Clippers being both part of Clipperholics, but, you know, talk a little bit about the Eastern Conference. You know, when we look at it, you know, how good are the Cavs?
I think they're clearly the cast of the East. I mean, the Raptors have been amazing, and I was looking at their offense the other day for a piece of it, and Terrence Ross, and they currently have the best, you know, offensive rating in history, which is amazing. And they're leading the league in offensive efficiency over the Warriors, which again is ridiculous because they just added Durant. It shouldn't happen. And I think they're almost 2 points ahead per 100 possessions, which is a pretty solid margin when you're talking about the best offensive lineup in Golden State that we've ever seen. But I still don't think they really come close to the Cavs when they can't stop LeBron. And I think that's kind of what it all revolves around. The Cavs have more talent. They're such a well-oiled machine. They've had a long time together now. Kevin Love has been amazing this year. He's really bounced back and then some. So I just think all of that they have together with LeBron running everything and being able to take over whenever he needs to, I don't think the Raptors will be able to stop that.
Yeah, it's kind of almost like a big brother, little brother sort of situation where the Cavs are always just kind of looking at them going like, you guys are close, but you're not really there.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the frustrating thing of whenever there's a Raptors Cavs game. You know, so besides them, though, you know, surprisingly, the Knicks right now, the way the standings are, they're third in the East. You know, have you had a chance to really check them out and any thoughts on them?
I've watched them a little bit. I mean, they've put together a pretty solid run lately, and they have been playing better, but they've not really beaten the best teams. You know, wins against Timberwolves, Kings, Lakers, you can't put too much, you know, stock in that. And I don't think it's going to last. They're not a super team.
I don't think, only person who thought that was Derrick Rose, man. Nobody else was everybody else was like, what?
Yeah, it's just, there was a few people that were saying, oh, these Knicks can win 50 games. You know, they could go to the Eastern Conference Finals. Wait till Joakim Noah is Defensive Player of the Year and all this stuff. And it's just not happened at all. And they're definitely playing better. Porzingis is clearly the best guy on that team. You know, it's not Carmelo Anthony anymore. And, you know, there's a lot to like there with, you know, Porzingis around. But Noah's just not been there. He's not helped at all. His contract's looking worse by the day, really. You know, I've had a look at Carlo Quinn recently and, you know, he's played well. So there's a couple of bright spots there, but the depth just is not good. And, yeah, there's just not really any. They're just not a contender.
Yeah, it's
there's a lot of issues.
It's one of those things where, like, their best lineup really is Melo at the four and Porzingis at the five, and bringing, you know, maybe bringing Noah off the bench, you know, for spot minutes here and there. But they're really dedicated to the idea of playing Noah and Porzingis together. I don't think that's really a great duo. I think, you know, Noah kind of just sort of gets in the way. I'm not too impressed with him. And defensively, he's getting older every year, and that contract's going to be painful in a year or two.
It's going to be very hard to move him. But, I mean, that's what I wrote about. That was kind of my angle when it all came together and they signed him. It was the length of that contract is killer, because if he does have a bad year, which has proven to be the case already, and he's not even, you know, missed a bunch of games due to injury, he's just been bad. Moving that contract, if you want to trade him, is going to be very difficult to do. They've really hurt themselves long-term with a bunch of long-term contracts. What they're going to do with Derrick Rose, I'm not sure. has been playing a bit better, but I'm still not a massive Derrick Rose fan. His defense is obviously still a problem. Whether they give him a big extension, we'll have to wait and see, but they just don't have the right pieces. And like you said, Porzingis is better at the five, but he doesn't really get that opportunity as much now. And there's a bunch of teams that, you know, I'd take ahead of the Knicks. I mean, they could definitely make the playoffs. They could sneak in at the end, I think, but I really think that's their ceiling, coming in around eighth. I'm not sure they can really do much better than that. And even if they do make the playoffs, they're going to be a first round exit.
Right. I don't see them going far. You know, so from talking about the team that's currently in third to the team I thought was going to be in third, the Boston Celtics have really struggled a bit this year. A lot of injuries. They haven't really had their full lineup together. Even now, Isaiah Thomas is out. But can a healthy Boston team give Cleveland a run?
That's kind of who I wanted to give Cleveland a run going into the season. I mean, everything they have together looks great. You know, their defense was, I think, fourth last year. You add Al Horford to that, it makes a lot of sense that you'll improve. And they've obviously, you know, dealt with injuries, like you said. I still don't think, I mean, it's the same case with anyone in the East, but I still don't think they really come close to the Cavs. Having Isaiah Thomas as your kind of go-to guy just hurts in that kind of situation when he is a short point guard and the Cavs can step it up defensively when they need to. And I love Horford, but, you know, the Celtics do have issues with rebounding. They haven't quite, you know, meshed as we thought they would. I mean, even with the injuries they've had, they haven't been great defensively. But I just think they don't have the offense, really, the scoring to keep up with everything the Cavs have. And again, stopping LeBron is going to be incredibly difficult for them.
Yeah, I really think they're just missing that go-to scorer, that guy down
exactly.
The stretch you're going to give the ball to, who's going to go get you a bucket, get to the line, or create for somebody else. And I think, you know, Isaiah, as great as he is, I just don't think he's not the guy to do that for a team that has championship aspirations.
I mean, if you swap Jay Crowder for Paul George, I'm not saying that obviously isn't going to be happening.
Right.
But if you did something like that, they're right there. They're definitely right there. You've got someone who can match up with LeBron. You've got another go-to scorer with size and, you know, get to the line, get them a bucket, create off the dribble against, you know, reasonably sized defenders. But they just don't really have that in Thomas. And Horford isn't that guy you dump the ball to again and again. He's not like a Blake Griffin where he's going to be creating off the dribble loads. He's just a really good offensive player.
Right.
In the flow of a game, more so than just doing everything by himself. So I just don't think they have enough firepower, essentially.
And then I was way wrong about Chicago. I didn't think Chicago was going to be good. I thought the combination of Rondo, Wade, and Butler was going to lead to a meltdown. I thought Hoiberg would be ready to quit at this point. You know, I've been proven wrong. They're playing really well. They're shooting the ball a lot better than I thought, although it's kind of dropped off a bit since the start of the season. You know, but they are a really good defensive team, which is something I really wasn't quite expecting. What are your thoughts? Have you had a chance to check out Chicago all that much?
Yeah, I was watching them last night lose pretty narrowly to the Timberwolves. I mean, yeah, they pound the ball inside on offense. They were absolutely killing the Timberwolves inside, you know, getting offensive rebounds and generally just using some of their size, Taj Gibson and Robin Lopez. I quite like that duo, even though they're not really a duo for the modern NBA. There's obviously the issues with spacing. They are good defensively. Jimmy Butler's been brilliant this season. He's definitely taken a step forward. Wade has been a little better than I thought he might have been. He's also been shooting the three reasonably well. I think he was around 35% the last time I looked, with just over a make a game, which is pretty solid for what you'd expect for a guy that's not really shot the three that much at all or that efficiently over the course of his career. So I think they have enough talent. They kind of make it work despite the fit issues and the issues with spacing. And those guys can work together and they have been good defensively. Depth is a little bit of an issue. And then obviously Rondo at point guard, he hasn't really been helping a ton. That's really where the issue is, I think. Like, I think Wade and Butler together, that's fine. Add Rondo into the mix, it's just another ball handler. And even though they've been making it work better than a lot of us expected, I still don't think, you know, he's the guy for a contending team in the East when you've got the Cavs and the Raptors at the top. He's just not enough, and his defense is poor as well, off the ball especially.
No, I agree with you in that sense. Not a fan of Rondo's all that much. I think he's resting on his reputation more these days. And I honestly think he's not far from being out of the league in the next year or two. just too much baggage, and I think teams are going to want to get away from that.
Yeah, I'd probably agree there. He's definitely he's fallen a long way, but I like the rest of kind of what they have. They just need some more shooting, but I don't think they've got enough. You know, with the teams at the top, I think over the course of the season, you know, as their shooting kind of does create problems, you know, teams gradually learn more how to defend them over the course of the season. And, you know, they had a few wins that were helped early on by really hot three-point shooting. I think as all that kind of settles in, they're going to fall off a little bit, probably slip down the rankings slightly.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all lines up here. I kind of want to talk a little bit on the Western Conference, and I wanted to get your opinion on three teams. I'd like you to rank them on who you think's better between Memphis Grizzlies, Oklahoma City Thunder, and the Utah Jazz. Of those three, can you rank them for me?
Okay, Jazz top. I love what they've been doing. Everyone said it before the season, how they could take a big leap this year. I had them fourth. Again, the big issue and the really annoying thing is that they've just not been able to get healthy,
right?
Which they always seem to be one healthy guy away from being, you know, reaching their potential. Derek Favors has been hurt a lot, and they've been, you know, George Hill's missed some time, and they've dealt with a bunch of injuries. But despite all that, they're still top 10. I think they may even be top 8 now in both offensive and defensive efficiency. They've, you know, put a few more wins together, and they match up so well against so many teams, got so much length and size. Their defense plays really well together. Rudy Gobert's been great this season. Hayward's been playing really well. George Hill's been terrific. So they've got a bunch of guys that fit really well together. So I like what they have. And then below them, I'd probably say the Thunder, purely because the Grizzlies' health issues, again, just really cost them. Mike Conley's out for a while. Chandler Parsons is out. With everything hindering so much on Marc Gasol, as great as he's been this season, they just don't have much. They've got so many young guards they're relying on. And while they've kind of been scrapping out these wins, a bunch of their wins have come late in games, which just isn't sustainable when you're winning games by a few points. At some point, it's not going to go their way, and that's going to hurt them. So I think I'd probably put the Thunder second, purely because of health issues. I think they're going to hurt the Grizzlies long term.
I'm with you on the Jazz. I have the Jazz the best of those three, and they're playing well even though they're not healthy. Like, despite the injuries, they're still succeeding, and doing and playing solid basketball. And I think, you know, if they are ever to get everybody healthy at the same time, like, they're really going to be a problem for the West. After that, though, I have Memphis just a tick above OKC, and for a couple of reasons. You know, one, you said it, Gasol's been playing out of his mind. When Conley went out, I was like, dude, they're done. There's nothing. We're about to see them plummet out of the playoffs. You know, they're going to hit rock bottom pretty soon for the next 6 weeks. And they just keep finding ways to win games. And, you know, it was the same thing last year under, even though it was a different coach, you know, they had like a full-on MASH unit. And these guys would still take teams to the wire and compete, you know. So for me, I have Memphis there. Only reason why I have Oklahoma City on the bottom of this list is just, I think, so dependent on Russell Westbrook. It's too difficult. I don't know if he can sustain playing at the rate he's playing. You know, they just lost a back-to-backs to Portland and to Utah, and that's not an easy back-to-back by any stretch of the imagination. And Oladipo's out, but they have a brutal stretch coming up. Like, of their... They're right now, their next game's on Saturday, and they don't have 2 days off until about mid to late January. And right. In that run, they're playing the Clippers, they're playing the Rockets, they're playing Memphis, they got the Clippers again, the Warriors. You know, they got a tough schedule coming up. That's going to be a big test for them if they can find a way to maintain and stay. I think it's 16 games. If they can just stay 500 in that run, they'll be fine. But for me, I'm looking at that stretch, and I just kind of think we might start to see them drop off quite a bit. So for me, it's Utah, Memphis, then OKC.
Yeah, I mean, I think even if I do put the Thunder slightly ahead of the Grizzlies, it's very close with those two. I think if they both make the playoffs, they're going to be down the bottom of the seedings. I don't think either of them are going to be top five or top six, really. If the Grizzlies were healthy, I'd clearly take them ahead of the Thunder. I like the fit they have with Conley and Parsons and Gasol. I think that's a really nice trio, and they've got more shooting and playmaking with Parsons. It's just the health thing. But with Westbrook, I think if we're talking about a playoff series, I'd probably go with you and say the Grizzlies, just because so much on Russell Westbrook. He's going to have a couple of stinkers where he's just playing wild and out of control, and he's, you know, getting more turnovers, and teams are going to change their defense, and they're going to plan to him in a way that it's not going to be as easy for him to create everything, which is going to make a playoff series, if they get to one, very difficult to manage, just because they don't have much outside of him now.
Yeah, I mean, you saw it in the Portland game. I mean, they really packed the paint, and it was a pretty, I mean, they got blown out, and it was a pretty brutal game for them. Talking about seeding a little bit and teams that might fall off, are there any teams that are not in the playoffs now that you think might be able to sneak in, like a New Orleans, a Denver, the Lakers, or Sacramento? Can any one of these teams, you think, sneak in, or do you think we kind of have our eight already set?
I think the eight we have right now is probably, at least in the West, probably where we're going to stay at. Bar the Timberwolves, which I did have initially, hoping they'd make it in as the eighth seed, the rest is exactly what I'd expected, just in a slightly different order, and with the way things have panned out with injuries and such. But I'm not sure, really. I can't see the Kings making it in. I still think the Nuggets are too young. There's a lot still on Emmanuel Mudiay there, which I'm not overly keen on. The Lakers, after a great start, they've now lost eight straight, so that's really put them in a pretty big hole to come back from. I think the one team could possibly be the Pelicans, you know, if they can stay healthy. Anthony Davis has a huge run over a week or two, and they kind of win. They just go on a hot streak and kind of catch up the few game hole they're in now. They're five games back from the Blazers, who are in eighth.
Right.
So potentially I could see a way that they could sneak in, but I still think the eight teams that are in there right now is where it's going to be at.
Yeah, I just think it's too hard. I'm not sure if anybody's going to be able to catch Portland, or I think it's going to take a real big drop off. Like for me, if Oklahoma City, like I said, in that run have a terrible run, then they're probably at risk of getting knocked out of the playoffs, and it'll take another team to sort of step up. I do keep my eye on New Orleans. I think, you know, they're starting to play better with Holiday. They get Tyreke Evans back tonight. You know, not that I'm a huge Tyreke Evans fan, but the fact is their problem is just they've not had healthy talent, and I think, you know, having their guys there would start to help them out. When I look at the standings now, Houston and the Clippers are tied for third. I know earlier we were saying the Clippers are either going to have to play San Antonio or the Warriors in the second round. You know, is there a chance you see Houston finishing third? Can Houston overtake the Clippers there and get to that third spot?
I mean, providing the Clippers don't have this 500 ball that we've seen lately for the rest of the season, which I absolutely don't think they will, I can't really see the Rockets overtaking them, to be honest. I think that their offense has been amazing. Obviously, we've seen that James Harden is in the perfect system now. Guys like Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson is just so well built for him to wreak havoc against guys. And it's really shown off his passing. But I think being such a poor defensive team, I mean, I'll check now. I think they're bottom three defensively. I think that's just going to hurt them in time. Oh, no, sorry, they're 17 defensive efficiency. But I still think over the course of the season, having that weakness is going to cost them a little bit when their offense can't get them through, when they are missing a few more shots. And I just think the Clippers have more two-way talent to kind of just stick ahead at third.
I'm kind of torn. I didn't think Houston was going to be this good. I thought their defense was really going to be a problem. But if they're in the middle of the pack in the defensive rating area, and you know, 17th is kind of sort of middle of the pack to me, I think they got a chance. I think it's one of those things. They can sneak by. If the Clippers falter a little bit, Houston's not far behind at all. They can definitely catch them.
Yeah. I mean, until recently, I mean, the last time I looked a few days ago, they were lower defensively. I mean, we're still at the point of the season where a few good games either in the floor can kind of sway the standings quite a bit. I still think that is their weakness. If they beat the Clippers, it would surprise me. But, I mean, they're capable of it with James Harden playing so well. I'm not ruling it out. I just think it's unlikely,
right. Given
the Clippers, providing they can, you know, just snap out of this little slump they've had. They've won three straight now. They're starting to kind of find their feet again. I just think they're more steady at both ends to be reliable over a full 82-game stretch.
So, talking about Harden, the big buzz around him, MVP year, you know, what... Talking about your MVP top five, like, who do you have on that list? Who do you have a list even? Have you looked into it?
I don't have a list right now off the top of my head. I'd potentially go with James Harden, just because the Rockets, they've got a few more wins than the Thunder. I think his efficiency has been higher than Westbrook's, and he could lead the league you know, if he ups his points slightly, he could lead the league in both scoring and assists, which would be amazing. After that, potentially Chris Paul still. I think he's hanging around there. Like we were saying earlier, he's played amazing this season. Kevin Durant was also near the top. He'd have been in my top three. I mean, his efficiency's kind of dropped off from slightly insane levels lately. He was at 57% shooting for a while. But I still think him and Curry kind of balance each other out a little bit to the point where I probably wouldn't keep them at the top of my list. And then the same goes with LeBron. I think if they are having an easy time in the East, as they will, to win the first seed, and he is taking a little bit of a step back, as great as he's been as more of a facilitator this season, I'd probably still put it somewhere else for a guy like Harden, who is kind of making his entire team go. Because if you took Harden away from the Rockets, they really wouldn't be anything.
That's my view of the MVP. It's if you took this guy off the team, what would that team do? And that's why Durant and Curry aren't extremely high on my list. I feel like if you took Durant away from the team, then the Warriors are still a really good team with Curry, Thompson, and Draymond, and the other way around. If you took Curry off of it, KD, Clay, and Draymond, again, that's an extremely solid squad in the NBA. So that's why they're not really high on my list. You know, first on my list is Harden, although it's really hard with Westbrook. Just if he can average a triple-double, I think you have to give it to him. I'm not sure he's going to. I just think that's an impossible task.
Yeah, I think the rebounds is going to be what could slip off. I mean, he has been getting a few more uncontested rebounds. And, you know, I think his teammates probably helped him out a little bit with letting him grab an extra ball here and there. But I still think that's going to be the question mark. Like, if he has a few games where he only gets a few rebounds, if he gets three or four rebounds, that's going to really kill his average off. And, you know, that could quickly take the triple-double away. And if they do finish seventh, maybe eighth in the Western Conference, I don't know if people are going to put him in there. I probably wouldn't put him in there just because of the seeding. And if the Rockets do finish much higher up, if they are a top four team, I'd probably give it to Harden because of that. But again, if Westbrook does get that triple-double, I think he could kind of buck that trend, which has been the case for so many years of the MVP going to a first or second team in the conference. If he gets that triple-double, I think voters are going to fall in love with that and probably give it to him over Harden.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm at. If he averages a triple-double, I'm giving it to Westbrook. And if he doesn't, I'm giving it to Harden. James has been phenomenal. I mean, this has been a revitalization sort of James Harden. You know, last year he was pretty much hated, it felt like. And rightfully so. I mean, I hated watching the Rockets last year, whereas this year I want to watch them. I want to enjoy watching them play, whereas there were just too many times last year where it's one thing to not be a good defender. It's another thing to just completely not care. And that's what it felt like when you were watching Harden last year. And this year, he's at least trying defensively. You know, he's not going to be a good defender. He's not going to be a lockdown guy. But just give me the effort and try. And just don't just constantly get backdoor cut and look stupid.
Yeah.
The way it was last year. Tom, I'm all done, man. I appreciate your time, dude. Talk to us a little bit about 16 Wins the Ring, a new website coming out. When do you guys launch? Your role in it, and just, you know, tell us about it.
Well, it's a really exciting project. We've got about 20 guys on board, 20 people on board. So many great names. I won't try and list them all. But yeah, we'll be launching next Thursday. We're going to have a whole mixture of content. We've got a couple of cap specialists on board. We've got some guys doing more film stuff. We've got specialists from all different areas. We've got people so we can really cover all areas of the league in really fine detail. We don't want any clickbait. We don't want any hot take trade articles. We really just want to have quality analysis and thought-provoking stuff. And I will be a national columnist, so I'm going to be looking at the league as a whole. And yeah, just really excited to get started. Next Thursday, 16 Wins a Ring. We'll be on Medium. And yeah, I hope everyone comes and checks it out. There's a lot of stuff already in the works that we're writing up that'll be ready for launch. So there's a lot of good stuff to check out next week.
So everybody, you heard it from Tom. Check out 16 Wins a Ring next Thursday when it comes out. Also, don't forget about us at Clipperholics. You can also find Tom at FanRag. And Tom, what's your Twitter handle so the people can follow you?
At TomWestNBA.
Perfect. Tom, again, I really appreciate your time, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me on, man.
That's our show today. You can find me at thejumpball.net. I also write for Clipperholics. You can follow me on Twitter at thejumpballnet. You can find the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. Leave reviews, rate us, and I'll talk to you guys next time.